So today, Mirtz Hashem, will start another chapter in the sugya of Bedikas Chametz, and we'll open up to Daf Dalet Amud Aleph. Boy minei Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, Hamaskir Bayis Lechavero Biar Basar Al Mi Livdok, Al Hamaskir Livdok De Chamir Didehu. O Dilma la socha livdok the Isura Bershusei Kod. Let's begin with the perhaps simplest or most intuitive way of understanding the Safek and the Tutzdadim in the Boilahu. One is that the Maskir should be chayv in Bedika because it's his chametz. Now, if it's his chametz, he's going to violate what? By Rabbi Yimotzeh. Is it Doraisa? Is it Drabana? Before Bittel, after Bittel? I don't know. Those are details that have to be ironed out. But certainly and fundamentally, he has the problem of Bal Yiro by Yimotzeh. And therefore, he should be Chayv in Bedika. What does that remind you of? The first Rashi in Masechta Pesachim. What does Rashi say at the very beginning? Rashi says that Bodkim is Achamet Shelo Yavra Ol Bal Yiro by Yimotzeh. Now, obviously, that applies uniquely or singularly to the Maskir and not to the Sochem. On the other hand, who is going to see the chametz in his rishus? It's the socher. He's going to be living with the chametz. That sounds like Shema Yovel Liachlo, which means the sheet of Tosis in Bedika. So if you'll take a look here on page 27, in the first paragraph, this is exactly what the Rav presents. The maskir is chayv in bedika because it's his chametz. He's the one who will violate Bal Yiro Bayim Matzeh. If it's at number two of Shem Yovel Liachlo, well, the maskir is no longer in the picture. He's not going to come to eat the chametz. But on the other hand, the socher is living with the chametz. Al socher lived up because Shem Yovel Liachlo lechora. Zoe machlokes ben Rashi v'tosus. Rashi holds the mechayv v'bedika at the beginning of the set of psachim is shem yavro lo b'bal yiro b'yimotzeh. Tosus holds at the very beginning of the mesechta that because chametz is lo b'dil v'nei and the whole thing, therefore shem yavro liachlo. So Rav Soloveitchik is not very happy about this. He doesn't think that our sugya should be interpreted in as Tutzdadim in a Machlokas Rishonim, that one side of the Gemara reflects the sheet of Rashi and the other of Tosfos. And therefore he's looking for a different explanation. Now that explanation is going to come up. I wrote a number one here. Did that come out on the...
Yeah.
Okay, that's going to come up in number one. But before we get to number one, we need a very important introduction here. In other words, we have to set down a very fundamental rule, and that is that what happened on Yudalit, meaning the Gemara says Hamaskir Bayis Lechavero Biyudalit, right? Biyudalit. It sounds like the Schiris took place on Yudalit
before the Zman Habdika.
No, I don't think so, because again it says Be'arbasar on the 14th.
Oh.
No?
That's after the Zman.
Yeah, that sounds like after the Zman.
Right. Yeah.
And that's where Rav Soloveitchik claims that, you know why the Maskir should be chayv in the Bedika? Is because who nischayv b'bedika tchilo? Sharei b'bo yom yudalid, meaning with Tzeisak Ochomim on the night of the 14th, kfar nischayv, he was already chayv before the socher was even in the picture. So what's the tzad to say, therefore, that the socher becomes chayv in the bedika? And the answer is that we look at the present situation and we accept the possibility that although the maskir was the one who first became chayv, but nevertheless now there's an overriding or a push, an overwhelming reason why now the socher should pick up the chayv bedika. And that is because it's bershusei kod. So what was the Gemara's idea? Why did Gemara think that if he was maskir es beso biyudalid, which means that before the schiris took place, before it was effectuated, the maskir would be chayev in the bedikah, because this was before the schiris. So why should now the socher be chayev in bedikah? And here, the Rav says utzrichim lafarish, right now with that number one, and he again presents a very, I call it, revolutionary thesis here, a new premise that he's throwing into the sugya, and that is that meikra d'dina shneim tzrichim liftoch. In other words, there's a chiyuv on both the maskir and the socher. The maskir should be chayav because when we entered into the 14th with nightfall, he was the only show in town. There was no socher, and at that moment he becomes mechuyev in bedikah. But on the other hand, we have ample reason to be mechayev the socher. Why? Because in actuality, the socher has access to the house, and at this point in time, it's not shaykh to impose a chiyuv bedikah on the maskir. And I'll read to you his language. This is in the third line. He says, "The efshar," he calls it beofen fizzy. I don't know what he means beofen fizzy. I would say lemaisa. Those lemaisa lived or kabayis pamayim. In other words, if there are two equal chiyuvim, the maskir has a chiyuv and then the socher has a chiyuv. So what are we going to have, two bedikas? He said, "There's no such thing as two bedikas." Soon he's going to give us a mashal. But before we get to the mashal, he says the Gemara wants to know, if you have two chiyuvim, two mechayvim for two people, and there's only one bedika that shayach, so is it the maskir is going to do the bedika or the socher? And basically, what the socher wants to do is he wants to force the hand of the maskir to do the bedika, and therefore the maskir should be forced by the socher to do the bedika because he became chayv. It was his chametz at the beginning, the inception of Yudal.
Exactly.
What should we say? No. Since the socher is living with the chametz, and therefore there's enough reason to say that he's the one who has access to the chametz, forgetting about Shemi Yovel Yochel, but he's the one who should be implementing the bedikah because he's got the keys in his pocket, so to speak. Therefore, the maskir has a right to say to the socher, when the socher says, "You, Mr. Maskir, you rented me this apartment, you have to do the bedikah. It was in your possession at the time of the chiyuv chametz with Leil Yudalid." Since the socher yesh ata efsharis likanes lebayis velivdo, therefore the maskir has a right to say to the socher, "Look, on the one end, the chametz is in your rishus; you're the one who's living with the chametz. Top it off with the fact that you have the possibility of going into the house and doing bedika." And therefore, Rav Soloveitchik comes to the conclusion that the suffix in the Gemara is not who's chayiv in bedika. They're really both chayiv. There's a mechayiv on the maskir, there's a mechayiv on the socher. The mechayiv on the maskir is the theoretical, conceptual chiyuv that was, the inception of that chiyuv was at the time of Leil Yudalid on the maskir. The socher was not in the picture. There is a chiyuv on the socher because now, at this particular moment, there's only one person who has access to the house and therefore access to the, or the possibility of implementing the bedikah. And now the question is, Lamaisa, who is going to force whom to do the bedikah? In other words, really, it's a sugya of kedima. That's what he points out at the end of this paragraph. You see where he underlines the word kedima. Kedima means who has, shall we say, the priority chiyuv. You know, there's, you know, there are those who sit at the front of the plane, you know, they have priority seating, and those who sit in Nebuch with the plebs in the back. Who has the main chiyuv? There are two chiyuvim. The implication here, I think, is that if the maskir would not fulfill, he would renege on his chiyuv. Let's say he gets on a plane and he ends up in Aruba, you know, for Pesach. Then the socher would have to pick up the chiyuv because he's chayav. So as long as the maskir is around, according to one side of the Gemara, the socher could force the hand of the maskir. But if at the end of the day the maskir is not available for bedika, then we cannot undermine the chiyuv on the socher.
Why can't we just say this is the same case that we saw in the
Shulchan Aruch
yesterday?
Just one second. Oh, I'm sorry. Can you just give me one more minute because I wanted to get to one punchline, and then the floor is yours. The punchline I wanted to get to is the next line in the Gemara. The Gemara says, "Amar Rav Misharshia." Just one second. Did I skip a line? "Amar Rav Misharshia." No, I skipped a line. Toshma, Hamaskir Bayis Lechavela Socher Lasos Lo Mezuzah. And the Rav is very bothered by this. What was the analogy to mezuzah? You know, we have specific svaras here to be Mechayev the Maskir, to be Mechayev the Socher. Why does the Gemara stretch its arm out to mezuzah? I mean, mezuzah is a whole new mitzvah. In fact, the Gemara to Maskon is going to reject the analogy to mezuzah, but at this point, the Gemara has a strong habimi to analogize. I don't know if there's such a word, right? Mezuzah and bedikas chametz. Since the Rav, mezuzah becomes the paradigm for a mitzvah that cannot be fulfilled twice, and there are two different individuals, each one who's chayav in that mitzvah. And the question is, in the tug of war here between the maskir and the socher, does the socher have rights to force the hand of the maskir to put up the mezuzah, or vice versa? Both are chayav in mezuzah. The maskir is chayav in the mezuzah because he owns the house. The socher is chayav in the mezuzah because he's living in the house. So the parallel here to mezuzah is that here's a case where there's ample machayev or koach achiyuv to impose a chiyuv on two different individuals, the maskir and the socher. And Rav Soloveitchik thinks that he has a Rashi, we'll see the Rashi in just a second, to prove that there's a shiloh, a sofik in the Gemara, which arises in Bedikas Chametz, but it's really way beyond, it's not a din mesuyam in Bedikas Chametz, it's way beyond the parameters of Bedikas Chametz, and that is, when you have a maskir and a socher, both of whom should be chayav in a mitzvah, who can force whose hand to implement the mitzvah? And what's the Rashi? If you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says, let's count down in the wide lines, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines down in the wide lines, and he says, Mi boilon, torach ze al mi mutal. So Rav Soloveitchik is very perturbed by the language of Rashi. First of all, Rashi indicates Torah, and then Rashi says on the other hand, Almi Mutal. Like, what's the Rashi is very ambiguous. Rav Soloveitchik wants to claim that Rashi is not emphasizing the Chiyuv and saying Chiyuv Zalmi Mutal, but rather Torah. What's the difference between Chiyuv and Torah? If Rashi would have said Chiyuv Zalmi Mutal, then it would mean we have to determine who's obligated in the mitzvah of Bedika. And that would be misleading, because the truth is that both are obligated in the mitzvah of Bedika. Are you with me so far? So therefore Rashi shifts his language from Chiyuv Zalmi Mutal to Torah. So Torah means the Lamaisa. In other words, Befal, who has to actualize and implement this Bedika? Rashi's implying that it's a big hassle, right? The Bedika is a Torah Godel. Who wants to do what? So does the Socher have the right to turn to the Maskir and say, I'm going to be Machayev you to implement it? The Maskir turns to the Socher and says, no, you're living in the house, you implement it. But both are Mechuyavim, they're two Bari Chiyuvim. The question is, Befal, who's going to implement it? Who has the right to force the other one's hand to implement the Chiyuv? And the Gemara is going to take this as a question with regard to Maskir and Socher for any mitzvah. Any mitzvah in which both the Maskir and the Socher can be equally obligated, so the Chiyuv is there on both of them, who has the right to force the other one's hand to implement the mitzvah? And the paradigm case is going to be mezuzah. Because the mezuzah, both the maskir, so far as he's the owner of the house, is chayav mezuzah. The socher is living in the house, he's chayav mezuzah. Can the socher turn to the maskir and say, you have to put up the mezuzahs? You're the owner of the house. Or does the maskir have a right to turn to the socher and say, you're living in the house, you put up the mezuzah? And the answer is, ala socher lasos mezuzah. Since it's ala socher lasos mezuzah, the Gemara is able to extrapolate from the case of mezuzah that whenever there's a double chiyuv on a maskir and a socher, this socher is chayev to implement, and the maskir could force the hand of the socher to put up the mezuzah. Hu adin v'hu atam. In the case of bedikas chametz, Torah zu al mimutal, who has to implement the mitzvah of bedika, and the maskir in this case should have the right to turn to the socher and say, I'm going to force your hand, you're obligated to put up the mitzvah, to do the
mitzvah. Two questions. this is only because only in the Havmina of the Gemara, because then we have close to the
okay. Correct.
Okay.
Then the Gemara is going to say no. It's not a matter of fighting between the Masker and the Sofer. The Masker is not chayev for the mitzvah of the Zuzah. Only the Sofer exclusive. That has nothing to do with the Kesman.
So my question that I want to ask was, the Gemara is clear that the reason why the Masker might be the one who's chayev here, or is the one chayev, is because the Chometz is his. Not because the house is his, because the Chometz is his.
Right.
So why is this not parallel to the case we saw yesterday, that we saw in the Shulchan Aruch in Tufnan Gimel, where it said that when one Yid leaves his Chometz in the house of another Yid, there's no chiyuv for the person himself. It's either, well, according to the Grub, according to the Bach and the Avram, that I have to do it because of Kol Yisrael Reim Zelazeh, but it's not my chiyuv to do it. I'm just doing it because I'm helping you. Why is it not the same case here? This guy comes in, he's the chsoche, moves into the house, and that one drop of chametz is his. It all belongs to the other guy. The other guy can come and take it if he wants. He doesn't come. So then I have to do it because why is it that the chiv is on me? It's not my chametz. Why is it not the same case?
So in other words, you want to reconcile the Rav's understanding of why the Socher is Chayav and Medika with the Magen Avraham, who says that if Reuven's chametz is in the possession of Shimon, then Shimon is not chayev in bedika. He's only doing it to save Reuven from for the hangman from the violation of Bal Yerov Ba'Yimotzeh. Let's see. I don't think it's analysis. Let me just give me a minute to clarify this.
I mean, the only thing I can think of is the house never had a bedika.
Right, just 1 second. No, the Magen Avraham is asking a question about Bal Yerov Ba'Yimotzeh, right? And he's saying the following Magen Avraham is saying that since he deposited his chametz in my rishus, I'm not sure. I mean, do we have the Mishnah Berurah? I don't want to say something that's way off the mark here. But if I'm not, if you don't mind, I'm afraid that all these farm are going to fall down on me, and then it's going to end up. You don't mind opening up. If I remember correctly, the issue there was saving the owner of the chametz from Bal Yerov Ba'Yimotzeh. Mm-hmm. Correct? We'll check it out and see if that's correct. That's not the issue here. The issue here is bedikas chametz. And the Chazal established bedikas chametz. If you're living in a house that has chametz in it, because the makom shemachnisim bo chametz. Am I right? It's about Bal Yerov Ba'Yimotzeh. Can you research it a little bit? It'll take a minute or two. It's not going to be explicit in the words of the Mechaber, but I think if you take a look in the Magen Avraham, which is quoted there in the Mishnah Berurah, he's worried about Bal Yerov Ba'Yimotzeh. And that's where Kol Yisrael Arevim Zelazeh comes to the fore. That I should destroy your chametz, because if I don't do so, you'll violate Bal Yerov Ba'Yimotzeh. I will not violate Bal Yerov Ba'Yimotzeh. Now there's another issue about bedikas chametz. That's really our sugya. Our sugya is, what about bedikas chametz? Who's obligated between the masker and the socher in implementing the chiyuv bedikah? Can the socher, shove it or push it off to the masker, or vice versa? So that even though the Magen Avraham would say that as far as Bal Yerov Ba'Yimotzeh is concerned, I don't have to worry about chametz of another Jew in my house because I never accepted achrayus, so I'm not a shomer, and it's not my chametz. Basically I said to the Yisrael, you want to put your chametz down in my house, go ahead and do so, but I have no connection to your chametz. As opposed to someone who's living in a house that has chametz in it. Again, if he's living in a house that has chametz, his schirus, which is a kind of a kinyan on the house, generates a chiyuv bedika. Now you could ask me the following: what would the Magen Avraham say, regardless of saving the other Jew from violating Bal Yerov Ba'Yimotzeh? Does he have to do bedika? I don't know. That's an interesting question. He the chametz is not really in the house. It's in a certain specific spot, and he maybe have to build the machitza or whatever he has to do to make sure that he doesn't eat from the chametz. But now we're talking about a different case. We're talking about a case where the bias that I'm living in is completely, it's reeking of chametz, so to speak. Every chorin who's stuck, it might have chametz in it. Right? The whole year round, the chametz was there. Am I allowed to live in a house which has chametz in it, from the chametz of the whole year round, an annual collection of chametz, without implementing a bedikah. So Rav Soloveitchik says, no, I'm not allowed to do that. I have to implement the bedikah. What I can do, though, is I can turn to the maskir and say, wait a minute, this was your chametz. With the nightfall of Yudalid, you had a chiyuv bedikah. I'm not willing to pick up your chiyuv bedikah, even though I'm chayav in bedikah, but you're the first one on the list. You're the, what do you call it, the first one on the chopping board, how do you say it? And then, what? Yeah. What's the phrase, Jeff?
You're on the chopping block.
Chopping block, and therefore you have to implement the bedikah. Or no, the maskir has the right to say to the socher, look, I don't have access to this house, you're not living in the house, you have to implement the bedikah. But they're both mechuyav. And we're going to soon see that Tosfos is not going to be able to tolerate this. Everything that Rav Soloveitchik is presenting is all in the framework of Rashi. That Rashi says, Torah zu al mi muta.
Why is there a chazaka of baduch? Once the Zman Bedika has come, then the socher has a right to say...
Oh, so the Gemara is going to say later on that the maskir checked out of the house in a rush. He had some sort of urgent call, and he didn't do Bedika. Now the question is going to be, Yosef, could one of the members of his household, in such a case, step up to the plate and do the bedikah? That's going to be the sugya on Daf Dalet Omid Beis. But right now on Daf Dalet Omid Aleph, we're assuming that the maskir had to leave under pressure. He got called out for some urgent meeting, and he didn't have a chance to do the bedikah. The socher now enters into the house, and lo and behold, there was no bedikah done.
It isn't mentioned by Rabbi Mitzvah anywhere in the whole seven, but it's coming, that's it, because we're talking about Erev Pesach, we're talking about almost right. Shas Yisuro. Bedikah already took place. So
I don't think he's talking about Bedikah. No. He's talking about, you know, Reuven left in my Rishus in a corner, you know, a whole bag of chametz. And I said to Reuven, look, I'm not willing to take a chrayas for your chametz. You know, Hanach Eifo Shetirtzeh. Right, and now the problem is that once we get to Shas Yisroel, this chametz is going to be worthless, and maybe b'toras kol Yisrael ha'reivuzel is I have to do whatever I can to prevent you from loss, from a financial loss, and I have to sell the chametz, or alternatively, if there's no bittul, I have to save you from bal yerov matzah, whatever it is.
But I can take the question one step further and say that let's say the socher does bedikah because you know, like Rav Soloveitchik says, he's chayiv in it. He sees he has no alternative. He does the bedikah. He takes all the chametz he finds lots of chametz, he puts it all in one spot. None of it's his. So now I can say, now it brings me back to Tav Shem Mem Gimel. I did the bedikah, the chobos bayis, chobos whatever, I did it, but now it's not mine. I can't be over by you at Mutzi on this. You can, and I can do you the favor like this Simon says, or not. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm not doing the bedikah to save myself a by you at Mutzi. Now, if you say that's the reason why we do bedikah, because Baal Mashah Sagi, so why do I do bedikah? So one of the reasons right, to avoid the possibility of being over by your mother, I can never be over by your in this house. Because none of the comments, no matter what I find, is never going
to
be mine.
So you have to say something else, that bedikah is the first stage in an enterprise that culminates with beer. And the beer here is not a beer of Bal Yerobai Motzei, but rather it's a beer of Bedikah, meaning there's a joint mitzvah that has two parts to it. It begins with Bedikah and it ends with beer. So again, this is not the beer of classical beer. The question now becomes, what do I do with the bracha? Would the socher make a bracha? And I think he would make a bracha because Chazal said that even though there's no Bal Yerobai Motzei in this case, since you're living in a house that has no bedikah, that itself is machayev your bedikah. So that becomes a mitzvah unto itself, which culminates against with beer the next morning. But it's a strange kind of beer, as Yechiel points out very well, because it's not a beer on my chametz. It's almost, you know, did we discuss this, whether or not, what happens if he makes bittul before he destroys the chametz? Did we talk about this? Yeah, so there were... I remember who said, one of the Rishonim was very, the tour I think it was very nervous about allowing him to do bittul before biur, because at that, he's really forfeiting his mitzvah tashbisu in that case, because it's not his chametz. And therefore we should delay the bittul until after, which I think is our minhag. Again, you can ask me about the bittul of the night of Pesach, but I'm just talking of the night of Yudal, but just if we focus for a moment on the bittul of Yudal, that bittul I think is our minhag. I'm pretty sure it's based on the tour to delay the bittul until after the bedikah, because if he after the beer, I mean to say, because if he waits, if he pre preempts the beer with bittel, he may forfeit the mitzvah of beer. In our case, I don't think we're talking about the mitzvah of beer per se. We're talking about the mitzvah of bedikah, and that mitzvah of bedikah culminates with beer. Now, are we saying shem yavo liochlo? Well, I don't know. You know, we're a little bit inhibited to apply that rule because Rashi doesn't mention shem yavo liochlo in the context of bedikah. But the bottom line is, he's got a bias. The bias has no bedik in it. It's reeking of chametz. The fact that he doesn't violate by Rabbi Matzah is irrelevant. You know, again, we can go back to something that we said 2 days ago, that when the Rabbanan instituted bedikah, that would apply even after bittul. Is that correct? So bittul doesn't exempt you from bedikah. It could be at that point, your chiyuv bedikah. What did I want to say? I'm sorry, it flew out of my head. Just give me a second. That when the Rabbanan instituted bedikah, what they did was they suspended bittul, and they have a new concept called Bayerobai Matzah. It's not Bayerobai Matzah Doraisa, because I've already done bittul, but it's a Bayerobai Matzah Dirabbanan. Now, why is it mine, Bin Rabbanan, to violate Bayerobai Matzah? So once again, the Ran offers two answers, and maybe the Rashi could accept either of the answers. One answer is that the bittul was not a sincere bittul, and the other answer was Shavi Yavu Liachla. But when the Rabbanan instituted a bedikah post bittul, what they did was is they required you to culminate that bedikah with beer, even though it's not your chametz. And on the Rabbanan level, we're going to consider it as if it is your chametz. Now, why did the Rabbanan do such a thing? The Ran offers two answers. But the bottom line is, either way you go, he's going to have a situation of a Bal Yerobai Matzah Derabbanan.
Can you do a half a mitzvah? One does the beer, and the other one does the beer.
Again, if they volunteer, then that's fine. I don't mind who does the beer. I couldn't care less.
No,
you know?
The one that's doing the beer has to be motzi, the one that did it, because the bedikah is the start of the mitzvah.
Well, again, if we come to the conclusion that the maskir is chayev in bedikah, then if the socher goes ahead and destroys the chametz, he has to be operating with shlichus, whether it's zochel livlo shol b'fanav, but in some sense he's the agent of the maskir. If, on the other hand, we come to the conclusion that the socher is chayev in
the bedikah had to be done.
Since we assume that the maskir is out of the picture, right? He's gone to Aruba. He's not available. The socher is going to have to do both bedikah and biur, and he's going to fulfill that mitzvah.
Right.
But again, the premise here of Rav Soloveitchik is a very interesting premise, that the equation to mezuzah is because we have ample machayev for both the maskir and the socher. If you take a look on the top of 28, that's what he emphasizes. Shnei mechuyavim. Okay, but now the question is, who is going to force whom to do the bedikah? Right? So lemaisa, based on the analogy to mezuzah, it's the maskir who's going to force the socher to put up the mezuzah, and therefore, by we can extrapolate that the maskir is going to force the hands of the socher to do what? To do the bedikah. The Gemara says no. There's no equation to mezuzah, and your original question of who has the right to force the other one to implement the chiyuv still remains an outstanding question. Mezuzah chovas adori hainu she mezuzah ein shneim mechuyavim. Your original premise is mistaken. The maskir has completely removed himself from the chiyuv bedikah. And if you take a look at Tosfos, I'll try to point out this Tosfos. The Tosfos says that if a person owns a house but he doesn't live in the house, he's not chayiv in mezuzah. Why? Because a mezuzah is a chovas hadar. So ownership over the house is not enough to generate a chiyuv mezuzah. So imagine you own a piece of property, you own a house out in who knows where, but you're not living in that house. Now again, if you go there for vacation, then you may have a chiyuv mezuzah, but right now you have no chiyuv mezuzah. So bialis is not a machayev in bedikah, it's only dira, living in the house. Memela ain kan hashva'a l'bedikah. You cannot equate mezuzah to bedikah, because in bedikah we're saying that there's a chovas hamaskir. Why? Because it was his chametz, And when nightfall took, when the Yudalit entered in, he, the Masker, was the only act in town. He was the only person, and he's got a bias. And here we're tempted to make the next plunge. What happens in the case of the Masker who is leaving the house? And what does that remind you of, Rabosa? You know, as we've been insisting that the Masker became Chayv and Bedika with nightfall of Yudalit, except there's one question we have to ask. What's his intention? He's going to leave the house. What sugya does that remind you of? Don't all answer one, right? Hayotze b'shayara. Remember that sugya? Well, what's the deal with Bedika's comments if not, I'm not going to be in the house during Pesach? So the answer to that question it requires that we ask a different question. Sorry. At what point in time do you become chayiv and bedika? Once you become chayiv and bedika, the fact that you pack out of your house is not going to be mafkia that chiyu. So before we get to Yotzei b'shayara to try to answer that question, let's try to answer that question based on our sugya of maskir and socher. What we're saying now is that the maskir should be chayiv and bedika. And we're asking, why should the Masker be Chayv Medika? He's not going to even be in the house. He's a Yotzei B'Shayara. And the answer is because he was in the house at the time of the Shas Chiyuv Bedika. And that clinches his Chiyuv Bedika. You know, it so to speak, you know, clamps down the Chiyuv Bedika. So now we come to the following conclusion, that what's the critical moment, even in a person who's not going to live in the house, to determine that he's chayav in the house, which moment in time generates the chiyuv bedika? Again, he might not be chayav to implement that chiyuv because maybe he could pass the buck over to the socher. But as far as the mechayav is concerned, he has a mechayav bedika. So what is that critical moment? And the answer is Yudalit. Oh, so now we have a problem because the masker is claiming, well, I'm checking out of this house. I won't be here over Pesach. I'm not chayv in bedika. And we're saying to the masker, but you're there at the time of the Shas Chiyuv. That's fine. But when is the Shas Chiyuv? The answer is, the Knisas Leil Yudal. Is that really so? We're going to prove that the critical moment of the Chiyuv, even for someone who's not going to be in his house, is not Leil Yudal. It's way earlier than Leil Yudal. I wouldn't go as far as to say it's Purim Katan, but if somebody would say it's Purim Gadol, you know, it's Shushan Purim, I would not have any argument with him, because the Gemara says that Yotzei B'Shayara, if it's Tov Shloshim Yom, he's Chayav B'Medika. Hence, I derive the conclusion that the key moment, which is called the Shas Chovos or Bedikas moment, is 30 days before Pesach. So if that be the case, the Gemara could have asked the same suffix on Yud Gimel, for example. He's leaving his house, the Masker, on Yud Gimel, and he's throwing the keys into the hands of the Socher, and he's going to sign an agreement with him, a binding rental agreement. And nevertheless, the Masker should be Chayv and Bedika. The implication of the Gemara is that Boyami Nami Rav Nachbar Yitzchok, Asoch Masker Baisel Chaver B'Yudalit, who has to implement the Chiyuv Bedika? Because the Masker became Chayav because he was in the house B'Yudalit. And that's the critical Shas Chovasa. But if I take the Sugya of Yotzei B'Shayara, the Vav, I come to an entirely different conclusion. That even though you're leaving your house, we clamped down the Chiyuv Bedika on you 30 days before the Chag. And if that be the case, then I'm asking Bais L'Chaver B'Shushan Purim, I'll be lived though. The Gemara could have had the exact identical suffix, because I don't know if the Socher has to do the Bedika, he's living with the Chametz. Well, the Masker is Chayav because we already clamped down the Chiyuv, and he has no right to shirk the Chiyuv and pass the buck on to the Socher.
I think the question, you may have picked Yudal in the question because you want to create a scenario where the Masker could actually have done it. Because if it's Shushan Purim, the Chiyuv was established, but the Kiyum, Zman Kiyum Chiyuv didn't come until Leil Yudal. So he couldn't physically have done it, he'd have to come back to do it. So do we make him come back to his house to do it when the Sofer is going to be there with ample time to do it correctly? Rav Nachman Yitzchok, he asked, you're there on the Yudal. If you're giving it the house on the day of Yudal, you're there the night before. You could do it. You shirked your responsibility to pass it off. Not that you weren't there to enact your responsibility. That's a different
story. I was thinking just the opposite. Maybe if he leaves earlier, he has even more time to do the Bedikah. In other words, if in the light of the Gemara of Yotze B'Shayara, 30 days already clamps down the Chiyu, then my friend, you know, I don't know what your travel plans are, but certainly the night before you get on the plane, you should be doing the Bedikah, and you have plenty of time to do that. Or on there. On Leil Yudalit, if this, let's say Leil Yudalit is at 7 p.m., and the Schirus agreement was at 7:30 or at 8, then clearly the Maskir is in a bind. He doesn't have the ability, he doesn't have the time to do the Bedikah. And yet the Gemara says no. He became Chayiv with Leil Yudalit. Why not say that in the case of 30 days Kodem Lachag? How much more so should it be Chayiv in Bedikah? And now he signs an agreement of Schirus with the Socher. That doesn't mean he has a right to shirk his responsibility, which was engendered at Shloshim Yom Kodem Lecha. So here the Rav comes up with a pretty radical idea, and Bli Neder will see it inside. The Rav insists that the concept of Shas Chovaso vis-a-vis B'dikas Chometz is not a simple concept, it's a compound concept, it's a hybrid. There are two categories of Shas Chovaso. There are two sugyas. There's one sugya Maskir and Socher, there's another sugya of Hayotze v'Shayor, and never the twain shall meet. Each sugya is addressing a different concept or a different definition of Shas Chovaso. Let's explain. Bedikas Chometz is made up of two elements, two mechayvim. One is called bias, and the other is called gavra. Okay, let's explain. You remember that yesterday we discussed the Isur of Koit Habayi of starting Talmud Torah before Yudalit, right, at the end of Yud Gimel. And we mentioned that there's a certain urgency here. If he starts getting involved in Talmud Torah, again, Markedisle, whether it's a, you know, a Baal Bos who's learning Medrash together with a group, whether it's a Chacham and he's reading the Torah, I mean, alone and so on, so all the different nuances. Whatever it is, we're afraid that Dilma Mimshach Meshach, you know, he'll be Mimshach in his learning. So what does that mean? He'll be so involved in his learning that he won't do the Bedikah? So we suggested, based on the Rambam, that we're afraid he's going to postpone the Bedikah. And the Bedikah critically has to occur at the beginning of the night. So much so that the Baal Amor says, maybe it's Bein HaShemashos. And that means that the process of Bedikah should begin immediately, without delay. Why? What's the urgency? The Rambam goes out as far as to say, if you read the Rambam carefully, that there's a separate divrei sofer, a separate enactment on the part of the Chachamim, that the Bedikah has to start b'tchilas leil yudal. The answer is that as far as the Chovas Gavra is concerned, you can talk about Zrizus, but there's no urgency. The Chovas Gavra can be fulfilled whenever or aner is yafel of Bedikah. But there's a Chovas bias. And the Rabbanon instituted an Iser Shehiyas bias without Bedikah. From a certain moment in time, even though on a Deraisa level it only applies from Chatzos Achile, the Rabbanon said, we're going to start earlier. And we want you to get rid of your chametz. We don't want this bias. We have zero toleration for a bias that has chametz in it. Involve and dedicate yourself to Bedikah at the first possible moment. So the bias generates not a chiyuv in the positive sense, as we call it, a mitzvah saseh, but rather a mitzvah lo saseh. And the lo saseh is the iser shehiyas bias. Normally, shehiyas bias would be because I'm going to violate Bali Rabbi Yamatzi with this chometz. And that would only apply with achilik. The Rabbanon preempted that. They were makdim. And they said there's an iser shehiyas bias from the moment of Yudalit, which according to the Ravid means clear out your chametz even before we get to Yudalit, so that there won't be even one second of Shehiyas bias after Yudalit starts. And the Rambam goes a little bit, he's a little bit more liberal, and he says, start your process of Bedikah with Tzeisah Kol Chavim, with nightfall. You don't have to go back to guarantee that the house is already cleaned up of chametz before your dalet. Start with your dalet, but knisas leil your dalet around themselves. Oh. Now let's take a look at the case of maskir v'socher. What are we talking about? Are we discussing the chametz bayis or the chametz gavra? Anybody? It's pure gavra. I'll tell you why. Because both of them are chayv in bedika. The question is which gavra has to implement the bedika. As far as the bias is concerned, well, the maskir has ample chiyuv because he had the bias at the time of Leil Yudal. As far as the socher is concerned, it's his bias for the remnants of Pesach. In the case of shloshim yom, meaning of yotzei v'shayara, that's a whole different discussion. At what point in time does the bias emerge as a bias she'eno baduk, means say as a bias she'machayev b'bedika? The chometz gavra is clear. We know that's unquestionable. Right now, he's leaving on a plane, and he's the maskir. He hasn't yet signed any agreements. He's obligated in bedika, but he's only obligated in bedika vis-a-vis the bias. The chometz gavra is going to be postponed until you dalet. We're only going to set up a chometz bias. I'm going to say, you know what? Don't leave your house in a state of bias built in baduk. You've got chometz reeking all over the place. At what point does the bias emerge as a bias built in baduk, which means that he's not allowed to leave the bias in that state? He's got to change the bias, transform it to a bias baduk. The answer is shloshim yom. 30 days before Pesach, the bias is already a bias shel chametz, and you're not allowed to leave that bias shel chametz. If you can postpone until Leil Yudal, that's fine. If you'll be available on Leil Yudal to implement the chometz gavra, that's wonderful. But if you're not going to be available on Leil Yudal because you're taking a plane far away, then before you get on that plane, you have to make sure that the bias is baduk. So 30 days kodem lechag is going to emerge. But that's not the issue of Maskir and Socher. Maskir and Socher, we know that the bias is Machayev, that there's a bias built in Boduk. The bias was built in Boduk from Shushan Purim. But now we have an issue, which Gavra is obligated, or at least according to Rashi, will be implementing that Chovas Gavra. It's either Gavra A or Gavra B. Oh, here the Gemara says we can have a different Shas Chovoso. The Shas Chovoso is Leil Yudal. Ay, Yotzeh B'Shayor, that's not the Shas Chovoso vis-a-vis the Gavra, that's Shas Chovoso vis-a-vis the Chiyuv Bayis. And that's when the Maskir, there's no Maskir, I mean it's the Yotzeh B'Shayor. The Yotzeh Shayor is, we're going to clamp down a Chiyuv Bedika before he leaves his house, because the Bayis is a Bayis built in Baduk. When does that status of the Bayis emerge as a Bayis built in Baduk, which generates an Issur Shehiyas Bayis? The answer is from 30 days Kodem Lechag. So next time, Rabbosai, when you finish celebrating Shushan Purim, look at your bias very carefully, and with a piercing eye, you will see that that bias has chametz in it. It's a bias built in baduk. No way, no how can you leave that state. You can assume that 30 days from now, on Leil Yudal, you'll be mekayim the chometz gavra. However, if you cannot make that assumption, if you're going to pack out somewhere between Shushan Purim and Leil Yudal, then, my friends, you're going to be involved in a violation of Shehiyas Bayis Baduk, because that status is Shehiyas Bayis Bilti Baduk, because that status of the Bayis is Bilti Baduk emerged with Shushan Purim 30 days before the Chag. You cannot leave a Bayis Bilti Baduk. This is an Issur Shehiyah. Again, if you left 31 days before, that's not a bias built in baduk. So we're not going to force you to come back from your vacation in order to make it into a bias baduk. But within 30 days, then it's a bias built in baduk. You're not allowed to be mashia such a bias. You have two choices. Either you guarantee yourself that you'll fulfill the bedik on Leil Yudal, and if all things are equal, that's ideal, because then you obtain an additional kiyum of the Chovas Gavra. Or if you're not going to be there for the Chovas Gavra, then you must make the bias in a bias baduk. Could be the nafkamina would be, anybody know what I'm about to say? The bracha.
Yeah.
Because for the bracha you need what? Asher kitchav mitzvos tzivonu. What's that?
The
Chovas Gavra.
Yeah.
And before Leil Yudalid, there is no Chofetz Gavra, there's only Chofetz Bayis, which is basically an Iser that you're not allowed to be Masha, a Bayis built to be bothered. On that, we don't make a Bracha. Again, this is questionable. You could always argue the opposite, that if the Rabbanan set up a bias built ibaduk, maybe there would be a bracha on fulfilling this obligation of not leaving behind a bias built ibaduk. But Pashtus, I think the simple, straightforward way was to be to say, let's remove the bracha. Because to make a bracha without a chovetz gavra, where do we find such a thing?
And Rashi says Torah. He doesn't say bracha.
Right. For example, in Yud Gimel, if I pack out on Yud Gimel, or, you know, there are people who, and again, this is a whole discussion in Shulchan Aruch, they want to do a piecemeal bedikah, you know, one room at a time. They don't want to wait till the night of the 14th and have the headache of going through. They, Baruch Hashem, they live in a very large house. They have 10 rooms. You know what I mean? They live in the five towns, wherever they live, and they got this big, or Muncie, I don't know. They have this big, beautiful house. So the Shulchan Aruch allows you, again, it's very questionable, but that's in Sif Yud Gimel, I think, if we want to look it up, that you can do a bedikah piecemeal. And that means that on, let's say, the 10th of Nisan, I'm going to clear out this room, lock it up on the lock and key. No one's allowed to bring in chametz. Ain't chametz, but this is what we used to do in the army. You know, I did this for 13 years in the army. We couldn't show up on Leil Yudalid, so we did a bedikah and we closed off the area with big signs. Bifkuda means that you can get reprimanded by the army if you bring in chametz into that. So you do it, and then the 11th of Nisan, you do another room, and the 12th, or maybe you want to do all your rooms, leave open one room for Leil Yudalid, and the Shulchan Aruch says you will not make a bracha, even though you did a bedikah, which is valid. Again, he wants you to do it at night with an Oran Ner and the whole bit, but you won't make a bracha. Why? Because there's no Shas Chovasa. Yud Gimel B'Nisan is not a Shas Chovasa.
But that last room you do make a bracha.
And then on the Leil Yudalid, now you have only one room to do. You're going to have a very nice Leil Yudal, which means that your wife is going to be very proud of you. You have extra hours of free time to help her out on Erev Yontif. Because you're going to only be boating one single room. And there is such a possibility. Again, you have to work out the details. And then you make a bracha. Because that's the Shas Chovos. 30 days Kodem L'Chav is a different type of a chiv. That's a chiv bias. That's not a Chovos Gavra. That means you can't leave the bias because it needs the Dika. And if you're Yotzei B'Shayor, you're not going to be there to fulfill the Chofetz Gavra on Leil Yudalid, then you better make sure that before you get on a plane, before you embark on the cruise, you do the bedikah to make your house into a bayis bod. That's not our sugya of Maskir V'Socher. In our sugya Maskir V'Socher, the bayis needs bedikah. In our sugya bayis and socher, there are two people vying for the chiyu bedikah, or at least according to Rashi, for the implementation of that chiyu. That's all about Gavra. So what is going to be the critical moment of Shas Chovoso in our sugya of Maskir and Socher? Leil Yudalid. And therefore, if the Maskir would rent out his house to the Socher on Yud Gimel, then there's no question that the Socher has to do the Bedikah. That was never even a question in anyone's mind. Why? Because the Socher now picks up the Chovos Gavra with the emergence of Leil Yudal, the Shas Chovoso. And the Maskir is not there for the Shas Chovoso. You'll ask the Maskir, but what about the Chovos Bayis? He says, don't worry about the Chovos Bayis. The Socher is going to take care of the Chovos Bayis because he has the Chovos Gavra. And I can rely on his Chovos Gavra to make sure that this Bayis is bottled. Comes along the Gemara and says, wait a minute, is it really true that the Socher picks up the Chovos Gavra? At the time of the critical moment, B'Knisas Leil Yudalid, it was the Maskir, the Socher wasn't in the picture yet, the document for Stiris was not signed and sealed, it wasn't binding, and the answer is no. The Socher is the one who's living with this house, with this Chovos. It's not his Chovos, but he's with the Chovos. And that's ample reason to be Machai of the Socher. But the Socher says, wait a minute, you know what? The Maskir was Chayav with Knisas Leil Yudalid. Why do I pick up the Chiyuv? The answer is you pick up the Chiyuv because you're living in the house over Pesach and the Chametz is Birshusei Kai, and that's enough to be Machayav Yud Bedikah. That's how Rashi learns this Sugya. The Socher says, can I turn to the Maskir and say, alright, we both share in partnership this Chiyuv, but you have the super duper responsibility. You're first on the chop. How do we say it? Chopping?
Block.
And you have to implement the bedikah. That's the Gemara's suffix. Tosus has a whole different approach. So what I want to do now is spend a few minutes trying to prove that Tosfos has a different approach to this. And then I have a few things that I want to learn with you about Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim. Alamaskir livdo techamir di dehu. Tosfos wants to come lafuke to exclude a literal translation of this Gemara. Because if you interpret this Gemara literally, you come to the conclusion that if the chametz is owned by the maskir, then the maskir certainly has to do bedika, simply because the chametz is his. Or if you want to embellish it, because he's going to be violating Bal Yerubay Motz, says Tosfos name. Ein lefarish. Don't take that interpretation. That might be Rashi's interpretation, but it cannot be accepted. Ein lefarish atam dekeven shalohu, because he owns the chametz, v'ein adam yochel levatel, meaning who's ever chayev in bittel, because it's his chametz, is chayev ipso facto in bedika, because it's his chametz. Elohu chayev livto. And that seems like an attractive position. You know, if you're chayev in bittel, you should be chayev in bedika, right? There's a joint mitzvah that starts with bittel and ends with bedika. Maybe not in that order. He says, Dimkein, if you're going to tell me that the maskir is chayev in bedika because of his ownership over the chametz, is a my knock at maskir l'chamir b'yidal afib l'yigimol yischayev a maskir my time will live dog. Tosfos is asking the question that we raised, what would be in the case of maskir bayis l'chavero b'yud gimel? And our answer to that question in the framework of Rashi was a simple, profound answer. Simple but profound. And that is that if it took place on yud gimel, for sure the socher is chayiv v'bedika. Because now the question is which gavra picks up the chiyuv at the shas chovaso. Ah, you'll tell me, but the maskir is a yotze b'shayoro, and he should be chayiv on yud gimel. The answer is no, because he knows that the bedika will take place and will be implemented by the chovas gavra. He's not a yotze b'shayoro. Yotze b'shayoro means that there's no one available to pick up the chovas gavra and implement that chovas gavra on the bevo yudale. Here's a case where, as far as the chovas gavra is concerned, the socher is amply a chovas gavra, and he will implement the bedika. Mm-hmm. Then there was never an issue about yotzi b'shayara here, as far as the chovas bias. Chovas bias again is only relevant when there's no one to fulfill and implement the chovas gavra on yudalit. That's the yotzi b'shayara. And therefore, in the case of the maskir who's leaving his house on Yud Gimel, and he is signing a binding agreement on that very day with the socher, there was never an issue. The socher is clearly chayev in bedika. He is chayev because of the chovas gavra with the inception of Yilel Yudalit. Tosfos, on the other hand, is perturbed. Tosfos understands that somebody is chayev. One person is chayiv, either the maskir or the socher. And therefore he says, well, why is the maskir chayiv? It's his chametz. Tosfos says, now I have a deep, profound problem. Because if it's because of his ownership that he's the one who's chayiv and not the socher, the socher has the right to turn to the maskir and say to Slavli, get rid of your rubbish. I don't want to clean up your rubbish. This is your chametz. You get rid of it. Says Tosfos, if that be the case, then the same Gemara could have applied on Yud Gimel. If the svar is to say that the socher has a right to exempt himself from bedika because it's the maskir's chametz, then that argument is equally valid on Yud Gimel. Let the socher turn to the maskir and say, you do the bedika, it's your chametz, I'm out of here. But in Rashi's frame of reference, that both are machuyev, now we understand why this issue doesn't even raise a dent if it's Yud Gimel. Because if it's Yud Gimel, the maskir has nothing but a bias. And that bias is only mechayev conditionally if there won't be a chovas gavra. But if there'll be an implementation of the chovas gavra, then there's no din of bias. Do you hear that, Rabosa? It's very interesting. You know, I know with Shushan Purim that my bias is going to need bedika. But that's only because I'm leaving my house. If I'm not leaving my house, the chiyuv bias baduk, befall, is going to be postponed till Leil Yudalit, when I can make a bracha, when I can fulfill the Chovas Gavra. I can rely on the fact that I'll implement the Chovas Gavra. Or alternatively, I'll send up a shliach. Let him be appointed as my agent on the Leil Yudal to do the Bedikah. So the whole concept of Chovas Bayis is irrelevant if there's someone who picks up the Chovas Gavra, whether it's he himself or a Shliach or perhaps a Socher, whatever it might be. Therefore, Yud Gimel was never an issue. You're going to yell and scream about a Chovas Bayis? There's no Chovas Bayis, there's a Chovas Gavra. Chovas Bayis means in the absence of a Chovas Gavra, there's no one there on Yudal. So Tosis Kash is not a Kash. But Lashitasa, Tosis has a problem. Because Tosis thinks it's an either-or situation. It's either the Maskir is Chayiv or it's the Socher is Chayiv. It can't be they're both Chayiv. And why is the Maskir Chayiv? Ah, because it's his Chametz? Then the same Suffix should apply on Yud Gimel. If you're telling me, well, on the one hand it's the Socher who has the Shema Yovel Yochel, he's living with the Chametz. On the other hand, it's the Maskir who should be Chayiv because he owns the Chametz and he's the only one who could be Mavatal the Chametz, and the same identical suffix would apply on Yud Gimel. But according to Rashi, as we said over and over again, they're both a Chayiv. There's enough of a Chayiv for both the Maskir and the Socher. The question is which Gavra is going to implement this. The Maskir on Yud Gimel is out of here. I'm out of here because there's clearly one individual who picks up the Chametz Gavra B'Knisas Leil Yudal. And that's going to be the Socher. Says the Ri, Lekach Mefarish Ri, the Chamiridi Dehu, V'chalalav Chiyuv Bedika, Shah Achas, Kodim Shiskira. In other words, the Svara, the Tzad in the Gemara, to say that the Maskir is going to be Chayiv in Bedika is based on pinpointing one split second in time. And that second in time is Tzeisak HaChovim of Leil Yudalit. And the Gemara thinks that if at that moment the Socher is not in the picture, there's no way, no how that the Socher could be Chayiv. Only the Maskir could be Chayiv. There is no such thing as transferring the Chiyuv. Do they still have it when they give you on the buses in New York? They used to give you a transfer. You could go to another bus for free. They still have that? Anyway, but if you look carefully on the transfer, it's like a little piece of paper, it says on a non-transferable. In other words,
you can't give it to another person.
You can't give it to another person. Right. So the Ri and Tosis holds that Chovas Bedika is non-transferable. Keva de Zachava, Zachava. Once you are Chayav at a one particular moment of time, then there's no way you can be mafkir your chiyuv and pass it on to someone else. Again, this is all based on the premise that the Gemara is analyzing who picks up the chiyuv bedika. Is the machayev on the maskir or is the chiyuv on the socher? So the Ri says that the svar to say that the maskir is chayev is because this chiyuv bedika is non-transferable. And since at the moment of sunset, or it says like, oh God, Leil Yudal, it's the maskir who's in the picture, clearly he picks up the chiyuv at that moment. And therefore the Gemara argues he cannot transfer that chiyuv at all. Again, it's a bit of a stretch in the language of the Gemara, because the Gemara says, Chamir di Dehu. I mean, that's sort of secondary in this context. It's not so much Chamir di Dehu, it's that Chovas Bedika Mutelis Olav Miknis Mizman Knisas Leil Yudal. The Kevach in the sky of Shuvlo Poka, or in modern Hebrew, would say, Uloy Chola Vir Hala Tachiyuvasa. He can't pass on that Chiyuv. Let's read the Ri inside. Lekach Mefarish Ri, the Chamir Di Dehu, Vechalov Chiyuv Bedika Shahachas, Korim Shiskira. Which means that there's time T1 and time T2. Time T1 is the moment of Tzeisak HaKom HaLeil Yudalit. Time T2 is when the rental agreement becomes binding. Once at time T1, the Maskir became Chayav Medika, get ended. That's it, he can't transfer that Chiyuv. U'maisi Rayami Mezuzah. Maybe it's transferable. You know, we said it's not transferable. Maybe it is transferable. Why? The Afal Pi. Again, the Gemara doesn't know yet Chovas Hador. So at this point, Afal Pi. Dechal Chiyuv, that before the Schiris was signed and went into effect, the Maskir, insofar as he owns the house, was Chayiv in Mezuzah. Nevertheless, we have a Braisa that says that if he rents out the house, who becomes Chayiv in Mezuzah?
Socher.
So you see that even though the Gavra was Chayiv in the mitzvah of Mezuzah, he can transfer that Chiyuv over to the Socher. And if that be the case, then by process of analogy, we could derive the conclusion that even though the maskir was chayav b'knisas le'yudalit in bedika, he can now transfer that chiyu. And the Gemara answers, no. V'dachi the mezuzah chomas adaru klomar afal afilim lohaya maskira. Interesting. The maskir, says Tosu, would not be chayav mezuzah even if he wasn't renting it out to someone else, because he's not living in the house. So that's why I gave you the example before. You have a vacation house or an investment house, you know, for real estate purpose. You invested in a house. You're not living in the house at all. Again, if you live there during vacation time, I don't know. You're probably chayav mezuzah. Maybe you have to be there 30 days. I don't know all the dinim. But right now, what we're saying is, if that house is vacant and you're not living in the house, even though you own the house, you're not chayav. The machayav of mezuzah is not bailus, but rather dira. And therefore, it has nothing to do with our issue of maskir and sochem bedika. The issue of maskir and sochem bedika is about the possibility of transferring the chiyuv once it was chal. Can the maskir be bafkia his chiyuv, even though he was clearly chayev at the time of knisas leil yudal? That's not true in the case of mezuzah. The maskir in the case of mezuzah was not chayav. You know, you really wonder why the Brice had to tell you that hamaskir by chavero ala socha lasus lo mezuzah. I mean, that pshita. But the answer is we didn't know the secret that mezuzah is a chovas hador. Now, why is mezuzah a chovas hador? Rashi says something wild. Are you ready for this? Because I never knew that Rashi was a Lubavitch Chassid. You know, Lubavitch, if something doesn't go right in Chassid's house, what do they say? Check your mezuzahs. Okay, I thought that was just a Chabad thing. Yeah, I don't make fun of Chabad, I can't. I can't afford that. I'm seven generations Lubavitch on my father's side. So I don't have a choice. But Rashi seems to say that it's all about Shmirah. It's all about who needs the protection of the mezuzah. Let's look at Rashi. Rashi says, Laso slo mezuzah. Chovas hador lefi shehi mishamroso. Wow, the mezuzah gives shmira. You know that there was a tremendous upheaval against Rav Yonasan Eibershitz in his time. And Rav Yaakov Emden was behind it. You know why? They accused Rav Yonasan Eibershitz of wearing a kamay, that he was a shabtai tzvinik, chas v'shalom. Again, Shabtai Tzvi was long gone and buried, but there was still some shirayim, so to speak, and it expressed itself in wearing these things around your neck for protection purposes, which might be an Isur of Nichlish. And it's worse if it means you identify with Shabtai Tzvi as the Mashiach. And this was a false libel against Rav Yonasan Eibershitz. And they blackened his reputation. It was a terrible parasha in Jewish history. So I would have said that the same thing applies to not just the kamay, but also to a mezuzah. You know, a mezuzah is a mitzvah. The Torah says to put up a mezuzah. I think I told you the story once. I was learning for an Elul Zman in Lakewood Yeshiva, because Rav Salvech didn't start the shiurim until after Sukkot that year. It was a very early year. You know, just the opposite of this coming year. So we had off for Elul. So what did I do? I went to Lakewood. I have a lot of stories about how they let me into Lakewood or why you got going to Lakewood, but that's a different story. Anyway, so during my tkufa of the Elul Zman in Lakewood, I volunteered to blow the shofar in an old age home. Now, blowing shofar in an old age home is not so posh. Why? Because you don't have a makri. And it means you just blow your guts out. You know, when you have a makri, tkiyah, shvarim druah, you know, he has a minute to catch his breath. I almost killed myself, honestly. I almost died of suffocation. I just blew and blew and blew. Anyway, I came with another Lakewood guy who was blowing in a different hospital, in a different room in the old age home. So when I finished, because I told you I blew my guts out, I went over to his. And he entered into a room. And there was this big burly guy. I don't know where he came from. He must have been from Denver, Colorado, one of those states out there. He was just gigantic. So he says to my friend from Lakewood, he says to him, "Is this some sort of Jewish ritual?" So my friend says, this is not a ritual, this is a Chetzer Shel Mitzvah. This big burly guy from Denver, I mean, he didn't know what a Chetzer Shel Mitzvah was. So what I say is that a mezuzah is a Chetzer Shel Mitzvah. The Torah tells me that you have to write a parasha on the cloth, a couple of parashas, and put up a mezuzah. Don't give me the shmirah business. But Rashi says that the mezuzah b'shamraso, uksiv beischa. The Torah says, "Ksavtem al mezuzah beisecha." Beisecha means biyascha. That you go in there. When you go in there and you go out of there, you want the protection, right? Baruch atah b'voecha, baruch atah b'tzeisecha. For that, you need what? You need a mezuzah. So, does the masker need the mezuzah? He's not going into the house. The socher is going into the house. He needs the shmirah, and that's called chomos hadon. Pella v'rashi. So if you ever hear about the Lubavitchers, they tell you check the mezuzah, don't laugh at them. Because if the Lubavitcher is a big Lubavitcher, hopefully, he'll quote to you this Rashi, and you'll have to contend with this Rashi. Okay, Rabbi, so let's take a break now. And we would like to learn a little bit of Sipri Tzis Mitzrayim. Let's just finish up what we started here about the bracha, or the absence of the bracha, on Sipri Tzis Mitzrayim. And that's in the book Haseder Ha'oruch. So we got up to page Shin Mem Vav, if you have that. And he says something pretty wild here in the name of, I think it's the Abarbanel, I'm not sure. Ah, maybe the Abarbanel's work is called Zevach Pesach. So I don't know what Shevach Pesach is. Yeah, so what's Shevach Pesach? Who wrote that? Yeah, I have to look up in Friedler, you know, what's it called? You know that four-volume work, what's it called? It'll come to me. Anyway, he compiles all the names of all the Sfarim, and he tells you who wrote each Sefer. Oh yeah, Beis Arkad Sfarim. Have you heard of it? Beis Arkad Sfarim. Ayin Kuf Dalet. Yes, no, maybe.
No.
Never heard of it?
No.
That's because you're not a collector of books.
There must be.
Which I'm jealous of you because I'd be a lot richer if I wasn't a collector of books. But I stopped collecting because my wife thought I was addicted to collecting Sfarim. I mean, I get such a thrill out of holding an old ancient sefer in my hand, especially if I know who the author is. So I have a copy of the Note of Yehuda, the first edition. And I have no doubt in my mind that he held that copy in his hands. Because back in the day, when you sold your Sfarim, you wanted to check them out beforehand. It's famous that the Chofetz Chaim would write the word Mugen in the Mishnah Berurah. Do you ever see it?
No.
No? The collectors love to get a Mishnah Berurah that has the word Mugen handwritten on the inside cover. Because the Chofetz Chaim himself wrote that word. Because he would not sell his Mishnah Berurah unless he checked it out. So he wrote Mugen.
Checked it out, meaning?
To make sure there are no printing errors.
We went through the whole thing?
I don't know. I hear the cash. I don't know the answer. You know, I can't answer that cash. Maybe he had helpers, and then he wrote the word Muga. But it was known that you could identify his chasimah, Yad Kodesh, as Muga. So for a Mishnah Berurah that's totally falling apart, people would pay over $100. Why? Because it has the word Muga in it. I don't know. Somehow through a sefer, you get close to the machaber. Like you feel, you sort of get a hug from the machaber. So this, the Note of Yehuda was published during his lifetime. 90% of the Gedolei Yisrael, their Sfarim were published posthumously. If you open up to the Shaar, you know, the title page, it says Anochi Hatzair.
You saw the exhibit at the Israel Museum?
No, I think it's the Rambam. No, yeah, I have to get it. Do they have anything from the Rambam?
Yeah.
What do they have? His Pirush HaMishnayos?
No, the Mishnah Torah.
They have the Mishnah Torah, the Rambam? I didn't know that. Because years ago I went to an exhibit in the same place and they had the Pirush HaMishnayos of the Rambam's own Pirush HaMishnayos, his handwriting.
But with his signature on the...
Wow, okay, I have to get there. How long is it? Is it still a month?
Yeah,
I just have a crazy schedule. I don't know when I'll get a chance. My sister told me I have to see it. All right. So we don't know who the Shevach Pesach is, but let's judge him by the content of what he said. He writes the following, that there's something called a conditional mitzvah. Now, we have a principle that we don't make a bracha on mitzvahs bein adam lechaveru. And there are two approaches as to why. One approach is that we don't make a bracha asher kitshonu mitzvos v'tzivonu on a logical, rational mitzvah. And the other approach is that maybe he's not going to want it. So theoretically, I can offer tzedakah to a person who needs the tzedakah, and he can refuse to receive it. And that's true for all mitzvahs bein adam lechaveru. Now, if you'd ask me about Sipri Yetzias Mitzrayim, I would say that's unconditional, that's an absolute mitzvah, it's not bein adam lechaveru, and therefore there's no chashash that maybe the recipient will reject my magnanimous offer, and therefore my bracha would be a bracha levatol. Comes along the Shevach Pesach, for now it's my Amaratzis, I don't know who he was, so we'll call him some anonymous Achron, and he claims that there's a condition built into the mitzvah of Sipri Yetzias Mitzrayim, and that is that my son has to ask the question. If my son doesn't ask the question, then the whole mitzvah goes down the tubes. Again, this is against the Rambam, but in any event, let's just see what he says. Kol mitzvah says kukim li acher kedei l'kaima. I'm dependent. It's a contingent mitzvah. I need someone else. Do you have it, Shin Mem Vav?
Yeah.
So it's the last
Yudalef,
the last parent. Aim of Archan Aleph gives the example of Matanis Levyonim Shema Yolo Yirtze Ha'ani L'Kabel. He doesn't make, you know, he's suing the kima of stock is not offering, but rather if the Ani receives the money. So we don't want to make a brach on a contingent mitzvah. Of course, there are contingencies in almost every mitzvah, like for example Shechita. Well, maybe I won't do the Shechita properly, or Tevilah. You know, the Gemara says that the water was cold, he was afraid at the last minute he chickens out, he doesn't want to jump into the mikvah. But the answer is, it's biyado. You know, he could do it. Again, he has to overcome certain fears, he may have to be very well trained. You know, I was actually present in one time in my life, I don't know if you ever saw it, where the Baal Toker could not get a single blast right. Did you ever have that experience?
Yes.
It's really humiliating. It's really embarrassing for the Baal Tokeh. He's
trying to crack the blow at the end of Yom Kippur. And
you couldn't get it.
I couldn't.
Yeah. All right, in that case you were fasting, you were very weak. You know?
Exactly. Yeah. I had no, right. No rogue.
Yeah, it doesn't mean we can't eat. You know, we don't need the shofar in order to be Matar Achila. But
I haven't eaten since.
Yeah, I haven't eaten since. Okay. You're like Moshe Rabbeinu on the 40 days on the mountain, right? So he says that l'tzorach kiyum sipritzis v'tzrayim tzorach acher kedei l'saper lo. Now the Rambam says explicitly, if somebody could help me out here and open up the Rambam, that you have one there, and Yechiel, if you don't want to just pass it on to Al and let him do the work. But the Rambam says, I think it's in Perek Zayim, Hilchos Chametz Matzah, that if he doesn't have anyone else, then he asks himself and he answers himself. In other words, you can be kind of the mitzvah of Sipur without anyone else.
Yeah.
You have that drama?
Yeah.
Oh, you'll have to find it, but you have to trust me, it's there. Now, if you turn back to page, what is it, Shin Mem Dalid?
Alach Gimel.
You want to read it, John? Just the part that's relevant. So the Rambam sees that Derech Sheila Tshuva is critical, but it doesn't mean that someone else is asking you. If you have no one else to ask you, you know, if a woman lives alone, she's an almana nevach, her husband died, then she could be Makai in the mitzvah of Sipri Yetzias Mitzrayim without anyone there, a single fellow, and so forth and so on. But if you go back here, you may remember that we had a long discussion about why the Rambam quotes two psukim, both of which are serve as the source, respectively, for the mitzvah of Sipur. He has Zohar, Esayom, Azeh, Sheyotzasim, Yitzrayim, and as we got into the Bincha. That was on page Shin Lamed Tes. And on Shin Mem, on the top, he explains why the Rambam needs two psukim. And the extra pasuk Zohar tells you that even if there's no Vigadat al-Bincha, there's no one there to ask you the question, you still fulfill the mitzvah. But if you have just one source for the mitzvah of Sipur, namely Vigadat al-Bincha, then you could ostensibly argue that this is a contingency. If you're not passing on the sipur to your and that's the difference between avira and sipur. Sipur means to tell someone else, whereas avira means to make a declaration. I would have a kriya or an avira without anyone else in the room. I could read kriya shma, possibly even Megillah, and all the different mitzvahs of Amira, like Birkas Hamazon. Nobody has to hear my Birkas Hamazon. I'm not transmitting it to anyone. But Sipur means to transmit it. And if there's no one there, let's say, for example, there is someone there, but he decides to clog up his ears, you know, he's not interested in what I have to say, then according to one school of thought, there's no mitzvah Sipur. And if there's no mitzvah Sipur, then your bracha would be a bracha of Atal. It's pretty original, pretty fascinating. I don't think the Rambam would buy into it, but... And now we go on to page Shin Mem Zayin, which is Nabi Yedbeis.
Yeah.
And who are we quoting here? This is the Yalkut Yosef. I'm not sure who this Yalkut Yosef is. I don't think it's Ravad Yosef.
The Shem of Pesach was written by somebody named Yishmo ben Avram Yitzhak HaKohen. He wrote his Sefer Zerah Emes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. He was a great Sephardic...
Machon Netzach Yaakov, Brooklyn.
Wait. Are we talking about? What are we talking about?
Shevach Pesach.
No. Oh, you also have a Shevach Pesach. So apparently there are a lot of Haggadahs by the name Shevach Pesach. Does it say Haggadah?
No.
I'm actually looking.
No, but I'm saying, does it say Haggadah on it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it does
say
So this is the source of the...
Oh, he's looking at the text. I'm just saying there are many books on the Haggadah which are called Shevach Pesach, right? We know of at least two of them, but there are probably a dozen other ones. You know, these names get circulated. There's no patent on the name. Yeah. That's why if you open up the Beis Hakeid Sforim, sometimes you'll see a full page of the same title one after the other, because certain titles are very, very popular. But this is the Zerah Emes. The Zerah Emes was one of the great, I think he was Turkish, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, he was one of the Gedolei Poskei Sfarad. So now we come to the Yalkut Yosef. You could look that up for me, maybe. Again, he says it's Rav Margolios. So Margolios is one of the Gedolei Yisrael. So
he doesn't say Yalkut, it says V'Yalkut Yosef.
Oh, okay, V'Yalkut Yosef.
So it's not the Yalkut Yosef that we think.
And who is the V'Yalkut Yosef? We don't know. See if you can find it. By the way, when you look it up, are you using Beis Hakeid Sforim? What's the difference?
No, I can't find it. I looked at to find that safer. Yeah. You know, it doesn't have it.
They don't have Beis Hakeid Sforim.
Unless I'm spelling it wrong. How do you...
No, base Arcade Sparm. Okay, I ain't kufed out. If they don't have it, I'll tell you why they don't have it, because there might be copyrights and all sorts of things.
Okay.
One thing I can promise you is that Rabbi Reisman definitely has a copy of Base Arcade Sparm, because he's a collector.
Moshe Peller is five volumes. Okay, it's Sparm Achadash.
I don't know what I'm
saying. That's an old one, which is
the old
Friedberg.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the classic. Now there's a new edition. He's probably building on the old edition, and he's doing an editing work, plus he's adding another 150 years of Sparta.
The old one is four volumes. The last one is...
I have all four. Right. I mean, you get it in a set of four. I don't have the original, but... Alright. So this Vayalakim Yosef says the following. The Gemara tells us in Masechta Brachos that the mitzvah of Geula, of remembering the Geula, is incomplete in our time. Why? Because our Geula is only a partial one, and it's the termination of Shibud Mitzrayim. But there'll be many, many other different subjugations in which the Jews are subjugated to the Arba Malchios, to the four different kingships. Mitzrayim is the precursor of the other four. And we also love, the Gemara tells us, Yes, Shibud Malchios Ikar, the mitzvah of Sipri Tzis Mitzrayim, which is really Sipra Geula, will expand and will include all the Malchios, because ultimately the final redemption means redemption from all the Malchios, all the different nations that exiled us and subjugated us to their rulership.
So you see, it's just an example.
Correct. Well, it's the best example we can get today, because in our time, that's what the Gula is. But ultimately, the Yetzias Mitzrayim will be outshined. It'll almost take a backseat position, because the light of the ultimate Gula is so intense that it'll almost completely blur. You know, Shragavatir of my Mahana. There won't be any light from Yetzias Mitzrayim. And it's all based on a pasuk in Yirmiyah. Hine yamim ba'im nu Hashem v'lo ye'omer od chay Hashem asher helos b'nei Yisrael me'etz Mitzrayim. We're not going to focus on the same night of Tesvav ben Nisan. We are not going to be focused on Yetzias Mitzrayim. Yetzias Mitzrayim is going to be minuscule compared to the great miracles of the ultimate Geula. Hare, she'ilu zachinu, if we would have the Geula now, the mitzvah would take on an entirely different flavor, and it would be so much more all-encompassing. Kiim, what do we have now? We just have Yetzias Mitzrayim. But we don't have the ability to sing the praises of Hashem and tell the story of the ultimate Yetzias Mishibut Malchus. Because of our sins, we're in a state of an incomplete mitzvah of Sipur. Because our Sipur is limited to Yetzias Mitzrayim. And therefore, we're not going to make a bruch on a mitzvah that's incomplete. This, I think, of all the answers that we got, is on the one end the most attractive, the most intriguing, but it's also the most revolutionary, most radical. Right. To say that now we don't have the mitzvah of Sipur, because all we have is Yetzias Mitzrayim, and we're still in Golus, and we have to wait and pray for the ultimate Geula, therefore the mitzvah could not get a bracha. That's pretty revolutionary.
Right, that would imply that if you don't have
Torah Mishata.
Right, exactly. If you don't have perfection, then you just don't have anything.
Well, I don't know. Here's the question, Yosef. I don't have in front of me the Vayalaki Yosef. I can just guess that there are two ways of learning what he's saying. I don't know, maybe you'll see a raya from the text. I don't know. He might be saying that it's not that we're looking for perfection, but that the mitzvah is fundamentally incomplete. No. Do you follow what I mean? The two different ways of saying it. One way is to say, well, we're 90% of the way there, we're just missing the makom patish. I think he's saying something much more fundamental. And he's saying, if the mitzvah is sipur ha-geula, my friend, we're not there yet. And there's something fundamentally missing from our sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's not really the sipur ha-geula. We're still suffering from not the Mitzrayim of old, but from the other Malchios, let's say specifically Malchus Romi, and Amalek is still reigning free hand. You know, we saw it last week.
What's missing?
What's missing is the freedom from four Malchios. Specifically, I would focus on the last of the four Malchios, which is called Malchus or Golus Romi. I think we had a discussion about that here, where we spoke about Rav Hutner's insights into Megillus Esther, did we not?
Yes.
I don't remember the details right now, but anyway.
Yes.
Now, in the footnote, he speaks about Shechiyonu, and he says the following, that there's a Kolbo. Now, Kolbo is going back to the time of the Rishonim, the late Rishonim, and he says that Hadover she'ein levar, ein levar shachiyonu al sfiras ha'omer. Okay, now we're going to try to create an analogy between sfiras ha'omer and sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. In the case of the omer, which is a mitzvah that's bar mizman lizman, it should be a classic candidate for shachiyonu. We wait a whole year until we could be mekayim the mitzvah of sfiru. And the kolbo, I know it in the name of the Baal Amor, but he says in the name of the kolbo that we don't recite Shechiyonu and Sfirus HaOmer because it's Zecha L'Churban. In other words, we don't have the possibility of bringing the Omer, and the mitzvah of Sfirus is just a duplication or a memory device to remember the Beis HaMikdash. Can we say Shechiyonu V'Kimonu V'Yonu L'Zman HaZeh on a mitzvah that is meant to remind us that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed? And he says, let's apply that now to Asher Kidshanu Mitzvosa. And maybe we could say the following, that if the Sipur of Yetzias Mitzrayim, oh, he does quote the Baal Amor. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, good. that if the mitzvah of Sifrei Yetzias Mitzrayim indicates that we don't have the Geula, however, he says, here's the difference. In the case of Sfiras Omer, we do make the bracha Asher Kitchon Mitzosu Mitzivonu. We drop the Shechianu. It's hard to thank Hashem for bringing us to this moment. In the case of Sifrei Yetzias Mitzrayim, we're dropping the ball even on Asher Kitchon Mitzosu Mitzivonu. That's a little bit difficult. Meaning, the Elakei Yosef can take us only halfway there. He's not filling in the last half. He's telling us why the concept of a bracha with regard to Sifrei Yetzias Mitzrayim is problematic. And we were very excited because we found a similar concept of a problematic bracha in the case of Shechianu and Sfiras HaOmer. The only problem is that Mimakom Shebasa, if you're building yourself on Sfiras HaOmer, we do make a bracha on Sfiras HaOmer. We don't say Shechianu. So in the case of Sipur, at least we should make a bracha on the Sipur. Now, Rabosa, I gave you a photocopy of my father's writings here, and I want to just share with you, we're not going to read through the four pages, you know, if you have a chance, you'll do that. My father has a very interesting take on the mitzvah of Sifrei Yetzias Mitzrayim. And to the best of my knowledge, this is his own original thinking. I don't know, he doesn't quote him, but usually if he's quoting the Rav, he'll mention the Rav. If he's quoting Rav Moshe Salvech, he'll quote Rav Moshe. And he wants to take us back to Vidui on Yom Kippur. And the Rambam at the beginning of Hilchos Tshuva formulates the mitzvah of Vidui Ketzad Misvadim. And the Rambam mentions three elements here. Number one, he starts with what's called Pirut HaChet, Chatasi, Avisi, Pashati, Asiti Kachlika. Then he goes on to the second element of Charota, Barei Nichamti, Abemasai, and finally he gets to the third element, Kabbalah Asi, Li'olam Eini Chosel Adoverzim. Then the Rambam adds another sentence, which hopefully will remind you by sheer association of Yetzias, of Sifrei Yetzias Mitzrayim. Kol Amarbel Isvados, Umarich beinyan zeh, harezeh mishubach. What he's saying is, he's already complied with all the requirements, the threefold requirements of vidui, but yet he should be marich. He should add. He should embellish it. Maybe talk a little bit more about the sin, the causes of the sin, his responsibility, how he wants to improve himself. Any sort of extension is going to be Hareza Meshubach. I guess in Brisker terminology, you'd say there's a kiyum that goes beyond the minimum requirement of Vidui. And what does this remind you of? Kol Amarbe, etc., Hareza Meshubach, of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And the Rambam in Hilchos Chametz Umatzah, maybe you could open up, Perek Zayin, Halacha Aleph, says, Afilu Chachomim Gedolim, Chayovim l'saper v'yitzis Mitzrayim v'chol amarech v'dvorim she'iru v'shahoyu hareza meshubach. My father would like to suggest that this is not coincidental that in both cases the Rambam has the following: chol amarech hareza meshubach. If it's chol amarech in the Rambam Hilchos Tshuva, it's chol amarech l'svados. If it's the Rambam in Hilchos Chametz Umatzah, it's chol amarech hamarbe l'saper.
What's the difference between Marba and Mari?
I don't know. Okay. Only because I'm pressured, Yosef, to get this in before Mincha, I want to express the following view of my father's Zichron Livracha here on number two. He says that we see, just 1 second, how many minutes do we have? I just want to time myself.
Three
minutes. All right. So let's fast forward to page three. And he says the following. The words kol amarbe or kol amarech are appropriate when the goal of the speaking and the enunciation is what he calls regesh pnimi, an internal feeling. He says in the case of vidui, the kiyum is the regesh of busha, when a person feels embarrassed in front of the Ribbono Shelom, again, not in front of anyone else. We don't have those little booths that they have in other religions, right? Where we just stand in front of Hashem. The more he's marich and he pours out his soul about his sin that he regrets, the greater is the regesh hapnimi. The same thing applies in Yitzias Mitzrayim. Bechol dor v'dor, Chazal say, the Rambam codifies it, Chayav Adam liros esatzva kilu hu yotze Mitzrayim. Imagine, he has to feel the brunt of the slavery. He has to feel like he was lashed by the taskmasters of Mitzrayim. He feels and identifies with the privation and the pain of his forefathers in Mitzrayim. He feels the jubilation in the redemption from Mitzrayim, the actual Geula. How does he achieve that emotional inner state of Ata be'atzmecha ha'yisa eved v'yatzasa l'cheres v'niftesa? It's got to be marich or marve v'yitzis Mitzrayim. If you just do a perfunctory repetition, reading an old story, a very formal text that you read from a book, you're lacking the feelings, the inner feelings. You don't get to the level of feeling chayav adam liros es atzmo. You don't feel like a podui. You don't feel like a nigal. In the case of yitzia, not me Mitzrayim, but yitzia michet, when you leave the state of sin and you enter into the state of redemption from sin, that's tshuva. The more he repeats and elaborates on his vidu, he goes way beyond the standard absolute critical text that requires three different points, that he achieves a regesh pnimi, which is going to cathartically purify him from sin, elevate him and transform his personality. And we're turning down to page 4. Just as in Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim, a person feels that he left Mitzrayim, he left the Shibud, he was a Padui, he's a Nigal, because he was marvelous Saper, he went way beyond the standard text. So too, for a person to become a Shav, to become a Baal Tshuva, he's got to go beyond. He has to achieve Tshuva Gemura, Tshuva Shlema. He has to say more than what is found in the Machzor. He has to pour out his heart to Hashem and tell Hashem that he has to be purified and redeemed from his sin. And he has to purge himself of that sin. And that's called a marvelous sapper. And he gives an example of someone who comes out of a concentration camp. You know, he tells stories that we can't tell. And how do we get to the level of feeling in Yetzias Mitzrayim? It's called a marvel, when he identifies with the experience of Shivu. And then he appreciates the Geula. All right, I'll take this up to you. Wish you all a Shabbat Shalom. Thank you. Thank you for a wonderful and productive week.